What a nice plug. Thank you. Hey, and thank you for reading that my bio, which is, it's a little funny because I'm actually not reading my own words tonight, but that was my bio. I haven't been writing, like, at all. Has anyone else not? Is anyone else here a writer who hasn't been writing lately? A few hands. Yes. Eager hands. Thank you. For a few reasons. One is that I worked on these poems about whiteness, documenting every minute of whiteness in my life that I, you know, that I could trace. And after I finished those, I felt something happened. As I was writing those, I became a different person. Writing them really changed my life. And then afterward, my poetry wasn't in this life. So that's one reason I'm not reading my own words tonight. And another reason is, so I live in a gender expansive family. I have a trans kid, and as I'm sure many of your, like, all of our lives have become really complicated very fast lately, it is taking up, like, all of my psychic bandwidth just doing the logistics for our family. So that's another reason I'm excited to read words to you tonight that don't happen to be my words. So I'm going to read some essays tonight that I'm really interested in. And these essays are kind of about being, they're by someone named Noah Rabineau, and she's a mom of a trans teenager, like I am. And what I really like about these pieces is their expansiveness and openness. And I feel like, you know, because at the moment, when things come through your feed or you're reading news about trans and gender expansive people, it's just bad news after bad news after bad news after alarming thing. And these essays aren't that at all. They have pleasure in them and joy, and I think also they're not super literary and are meant for more of a general audience. So I'm not going to read all of these, but I'm going to pick two to read. No, go ahead. This is the open mic. Yes. Sign up. People come up and sign up for the open mic. All right. So the first piece I'm going to read by this woman named Noah Rabineau, all I know about her, because this is a pseudonym, is that she uses she, they pronouns, and she's a healthcare worker. This first one is called She for All Time. Can you hear me? Okay, is it, like, sounds really echoey up here, but it's not. Is this really echoey? It's fine. Okay. She for All Time. Oh, and this is in two parts, like a short first part and then a second part. Here's the first part. In my 20s, I sign up for an immersion Spanish class. The hour after class, walking home to my apartment, is always strange. I have no words for the things around me. That skinny metal thing you hold on to as you walk up the porch steps, what's that called? And the hard surface under my feet, you pour it and it hardens? I'm blank. After hours of being immersed in Spanish, the world around me is wordless. I walk along through the neighborhood. It's so quiet. The names of things return when I stop thinking about them. At some point, making supper, it comes to me, railing and concrete. I look around the kitchen and test myself. Can I name everything I see? Spoon, table, bowl. All is in place, a settled feeling. When my daughter comes out as trans in middle school, I switch to using the pronouns she and her. Some parents I know struggle with changing pronouns after their child comes out, but for me, this part is pretty seamless. My husband and I celebrate our daughter on her way to becoming her full self. This is a time of joy, but then I face down the past. How do I think about her babyhood, my early motherhood? I just said, for the first time, her babyhood. My body pushes back at her, and I feel slapped down by a wave. I strolled him, the baby, around the block. He came seamlessly out of a past with rules that told me, your child is a boy. I accepted those rules like a glass of water. I scroll through my photo library and pull up my favorite selfie of me holding the baby in a blue hoodie knitted by my aunt. I practice looking at the photo and saying, her. Her first word was clock. She liked lemons. I feel a godlike copy editor circle us in red. It's not her, it's him. Hold him. Hold him. Don't drop him. Suddenly, every fear of dropping the baby rushes back to me intact. Off the bed, into the street, down the subway steps, under a rushing truck. And how I imagine begging the truck driver after to be merciful and run me over too. What pronouns should I use? I ask my daughter after she gets back from her clarinet lesson. When I talk about you as a baby, because it feels wrong to say she, it feels like an error. How far back does she go? My daughter answers simply, she is for all time. And then I have grief, a shadow rearranging the past. Looking at the past and saying her, I can feel the physical weight of my baby in the sling leaking out into the sea. I love my child. I need to hold her and carry her back there to the past because she asked me to, and I can't. He, a boy, picked clover in a field. He in a blue towel by a motel pool. My husband wrapped him up so tightly. A toddler with short hair. My teenage daughter can't look at that photo now. She hates it. That's hard. When I look at the past, whose past am I meant to see? My memory says one thing, my head says another, my heart has no answer. I look at the photograph without words, then move along with my day. My days are full. There's a lot to do. Visit the adolescent clinic, meet her new doctor, educate myself. I leave behind my question about babyhood as I begin to seek out fellow parents of trans children. I start to build a community. My husband and I immerse ourselves in the present as our daughter works out how she wants her transition to go. We ask questions, talk to fellow parents, and as a family, talk about how and when to announce to family members, friends, neighbors. I don't know how long this busy meanwhile lasts, maybe a year. But as I immerse myself in the present, I find, to my surprise, the past has loosened its hold on words. I discover this one day as I'm talking to a friend about the baby and realize I am saying she without realizing it or having decided to say it. What happened? She doesn't feel wrong anymore. It feels unremarkable as unlocking the door and walking into our house. Here she somehow is. I'm standing in the kitchen again, in the now. I look around and test myself. That's where her high chair was. Can I really say it? Is that her in the past? Does she have squash on her face? Yes, she has squash on her face. I see her. She is there at the playground with me, playing Mama Jellyfish and Baby Jellyfish. She's there in the living room with her fire truck, and she is dancing by the window. She has settled everywhere I look and remember. Wherever Noah is, I'm sure she's really happy that you're hearing this and that you clapped. I'll send her a thought message later. So I have a few of her pieces here, but is it okay to read one more?
One more.
Yeah. This is short. Yeah. Okay. It's called The Trouble with Clocking. I'm trying to understand clocking because sometimes it's bad and sometimes it's not. If you're trans, getting clocked by a cis person means being visually outed when you didn't want to be. Clocking feels hostile, intrusive, even violent. It's not hard to see why. On the flip side, within the trans community, using the word clocked is fine. For example, if a trans person says on social media, "I never clocked you as trans," it means something like, "You're an interesting person to me beyond whatever gender we happen to share," or, "I followed you for your movie content, and you're trans too? Cool." As a cis mom of a trans person, I do notice trans people when I'm out and about. It makes me feel good, hopeful, happy to see someone walking around freely as their true self. That's what I want for my daughter Izzy, 18, and for all trans people. At the same time, celebrating trans people in my mind for simply existing seems a little weird. With Pride coming up, I've been thinking about the first time we went to a Pride parade after Izzy came out to me. She had just finished 10th grade. We were on a mother-daughter trip and caught the celebration in the small town we were visiting. There were big crowds, bands playing, people dancing despite the heavy rain. Izzy and I walked around snapping photos of everyone in their jubilant Pride clothes, from 80s jazzercise gear to vintage cocktail dresses to full motorcycle leathers smeared with glitter. There was one young trans woman I'd seen earlier at the ATM wearing a fabulous wrap skirt. Later, I watched her strut out to meet her parade crew in a pair of tiny paisley boy shorts. I happened to snap a photo of the moment she untied her skirt and flung it off. It sailed behind her like a giant fan. Seeing what the trans femmes wore was a way to imagine what my new daughter might be like. Later, looking at my photos of the day, I wanted to show Izzy the woman in the boy shorts and the clever wrap skirt reveal. I double-tapped the image and, horribly, my phone zoomed in on the woman's upper thigh, where the paisley fabric stretched across her cheek. Izzy cringed and looked away. I felt sick. With that unintentional close-up, I went from style aficionado to clocker. I had snapped the picture because I admired the girl's outfit, not because she was trans, but it didn't matter. Instead of saying to my daughter, "Here's a cute look," the gesture said, "Here's a body like yours that I trespassed upon. I will now shove its most vulnerable aspect in your face." Izzy looked at me like I had put a lens up her own legs. It was Pride, where people go proudly to be seen, but there's a difference between seeing and clocking. And it would be a while before my daughter knew how she wanted to be seen. Recently, I asked Izzy what clocked means to her, and she said, "Isn't everyone looking at each other all the time and evaluating each other? Aren't we all getting messages and cues about who we are and how we identify from a million things about us?" Izzy's answers to my questions about gender zoom outward. She makes me see more of the world than I did before. It's 3 years later, almost June, swim season. You can always find me at my neighborhood public pool around sunset, after I've gardened for 2 hours in ferocious heat. When I walk up there by myself and jump in the deep end, it's the best moment of the day. Then I lie on the grass next to where a group of queer people always hang out. I'm not in the group, just near them. My swim routine is solitude, but these are my people, and I like to be near my people. I was a theater kid, a reader, an artist kid who grew up among artists. I prefer this spot to the one over by the soccer moms, families with kids, the normies at the pool. If you're reading this, maybe you, like me, are a cis person with a trans child. Does it not feel hopeful at this moment in history to see social groups out there that your child might belong to someday, just doing their thing, swimming on a summer night? My kid is not a theater kid. She does not like tattoos. I just happen to have a tattoo. Maybe Noah does. I don't know. She prefers to be stealth as a trans person. You would not notice or remember Izzy if she walked by. When she's here, she prefers to blend in with a group of girls who wouldn't auspiciously attract the label queer. At first, this way of hers puzzled me. What did it mean that she didn't look or act like the trans people I know or the trans people I see around town? Again, my daughter showed me the limits of my questions and my understanding just by quietly being herself. Clocking trans people at the pool, no matter how appreciatively, is a limited way of seeing. Instead of imagining what Izzy is supposed to look like, I might imagine that everyone at the pool is trans. The soccer moms are trans. All the kids in the wave pool are trans. The lifeguards, the lady who checks your pool tag, the person refilling the Pepsi machine, the pilot flying the plane making that contrail in the sky, all trans. Why not imagine everyone is trans? Anyone could be. Maybe we all are. Thank you.